Hello and welcome to Circling the Cup, podcast number 125, our first podcast of the 2019 playoff season. Standing in for our normal host, Alex, this week is me, Ben. Normally, I don't have to worry about the hosting duties and can just be salty and bitter, but I will have to be a little bit more engaging this week. With me from surely sunny Sweden is Colin. Hello, Colin.
Can you tell time? I mean, it's not quite midnight sun time yet, but it's it's not sunny right now.
Colin, as you well are aware, I'm an American and I don't care about context outside of America. So that's just how things are.
Yeah, fun fact for all the listeners. Anytime we're trying to schedule times, Ben talks purely in California time.
I rightfully require the person who lives in a foreign country to do all conversions because that would break my tiny little brain trying to figure out what time it is there. I'm pretty sure it's still February in Sweden, right?
I mean, sure. You know, we have our own names for all things. So I'm talking like a native.
Well, you are a native at this point. Come on. So anyway, enough of the hazing of Sweden. So what we thought we'd do with this podcast, since in our previous podcast we gave some projections of how we thought the different playoff series would go, and given that we just have two games to talk about this week, and granted two big games, but whatever, you're our captive audience, so we do what we want, is that we just kind of briefly look around at where the other series are. One game has already been played today, which it would be the third game in a series, but for the most part, like the Sharks, all the other series are on their second games or only have results for two games. Mm-hmm. And if you'll remember last week, we sort of took a look and said, here's where we think these series will end up. We're not nowhere near the end of any of the series, so they could still end up the way we are. But there are a couple of surprises as you look around the league, I think. So starting, I think we'll start in the Eastern Conference because less relevant to the Sharks until later, in theory. And a couple of the series have gone more or less, I think, how we all thought they would go. So specifically, Boston and Toronto are tied up at one. And I think we were largely torn on that series between us. I thought the Bruins would take it. And I don't remember if you agreed with that, Colin, but I think Alex was with Toronto on that one. And then the Caps have a 2-0 lead on the Hurricanes, which, of course, because the Hurricanes are as cursed as the Sharks.
Oh.
But there are two big surprises in the Eastern Conference, bigger than any you would see in the Western Conference at this point, which is that I think we all agreed Tampa Bay was going to leave a skid mark where Columbus was on the ice. And instead, Columbus won both games in Tampa Bay and head to their home ice up 2-0 on the President's Trophy winning team. So how crazy is this, Colin?
How many times have we won a President's Trophy and then gotten playoff bounced?
Well, only one.
But that one hurt. I mean, like, we're constantly saying how regular season is more of like a dress rehearsal for playoffs, but doesn't really matter once you're in. And I mean, I feel bad because like Tampa didn't look like a team that would come into the playoffs sleeping. I mean, they have it all, and they have and they have size. Like, that's the thing you kind of forget when you see a team with that much skill, is they're a pretty big team.
Some are. They also have that as one of the reasons I thought, that they had an advantage here, is that they don't overemphasize size, right?
No, and
if a guy can score and he happens to be 5'2", they're going to put that guy in the lineup, and they've been generally successful with that.
Yeah,
but go on.
Yeah, but they don't lack size. Is sort of my point. And
right.
And size can win playoff series. Like, you can get to the second round just by being bigger and meaner, or just being dirtier if you're Anaheim,
or being a lot luckier.
Yeah,
let's be honest, right?
True. So like totally stunned here. At the same time, I gotta root for Columbus. Like, I mean, come on. Like, you want to see upsets as long as it's not your team being upset. I mean, because that's good sports drama, right?
Well, yes, absolutely. Like, I think that is an amazing narrative if Columbus manages to pull off this series. And by the way, there is certainly no world in which it is locked down that Columbus will win this series, because it is certainly possible that oh, Tampa yeah. Bay could wake up in game three and win four straight.
Well, it's also
Make that a little bit harder for themselves because you know, one of their key players went and did a dumb and got suspended for a game. But I'm just saying, right?
Sure. But as a Sharks fan, I want every other series in the league to go to seven games. Like, yes. that's just what you want. Because like, you look at other seven game playoff series sports like baseball, and sure, a seven game series pushes the pitchers, for instance, mm-hmm. to be a little bit more worn out.
Yep.
But a hockey series wears everybody down. Look, and you want a team to be banged up and tired when you face them.
Like, this is something I said on Twitter when I was talking about Calgary versus Colorado game one, which I happened to be catching at a bar Wednesday night. I think it was Wednesday night. which is, there are two ideal outcomes for any series that contains the Sharks' next opponent. One of those ideal outcomes is a seven game series with several debilitating injuries on both sides. The second is arena collapse. So that's essentially what I'm rooting for in those series. And, you know, it takes quite a projection to look at Tampa Bay and go, I want them to lose because the Sharks will meet. You don't want to meet them in the Stanley Cup final, but I understand where you're coming from. Right.
Yeah.
The more great teams that get knocked off prior to a potential matchup with the Sharks,
the better. Well, and the other thing that happens in playoff hockey is your edge gets sharper. I mean, you get into the second round and you've got that even more hardened edge. You've just powered through a team that was not laying down, and right. you sort of have that bloodlust that you take into the next series. It's why a lot of times when one team like sweeps a series and the other team goes seven games, the people who are hockey fans look at the seven game series and say that team is more ready than the sweeping team.
Right. I totally see that. And we saw that last year. Well, not really. I was going to say we kind of saw that last year with the Sharks getting their sweep and then not looking as sharp against Vegas, but Vegas got their sweep as well. So both teams basically had to sit back and wait.
Yeah.
You know, what maybe was more relevant there was bad coaching decisions than going into the second round series. Like,
hold up, Ben, we're not there yet.
Playing an orange cone in the general shape and size of Paul Martin on defense was a bad idea.
I thought we were going to wait before we got to that stuff. But
I guess there's two things I want to say about the Tampa Bay thing, right? I'm really interested to see how Tampa Bay responds in game three. I've been really interested to see how their coaching staff has approached talking about the problem. You know, their coach actually referred to it as a five alarm fire, meaning there's urgency to turn things around. Yep. And there's a thin line between urgency, desperation, panic, etc., right? The good ways to look at this and the bad ways to look at it.
Yep.
So that's kind of where I look here, which is, can Tampa Bay go in and win both games in Columbus? And they absolutely can. They're a better team than Columbus. They may not be getting better goaltending. They may not be playing better in all zones at this moment, but they proved in the regular season that they were the better team. They just have to show up. And that the president, you know, some people look at the President's Trophy as a curse. If you look statistically, you would expect the President's Trophy winning team to win about as often as they do win the cup, just because hockey is a game that is highly luck based and the best team is not always going to win, whether we're talking about an individual game or a series. And so, you know, in that sense, I'm not shocked by Columbus being up 2-0. I'm just disappointed or not really. Right.
Well,
now others. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, no, there's no disappointment here. As I said, it's good. It's great sports drama.
Yes.
And I would rather see a Tampa team that's been knocked around and sort of playing from their heels.
Yes.
Like, go up against, I mean, we haven't gone to the series yet, but I don't think Boston's losing. I would rather see a knocked around Tampa go against the Boston team.
Yeah, or Toronto. I mean, again, like, I'm not heavily invested in any of those teams coming out of there, except I did have Boston going to the final. But you know, there is this thing to say here too, where if Tampa Bay does turn it around and then reverse sweep Columbus out of the playoffs, that's actually may not be as good for whoever's going to meet them up next, because that's a real confidence builder, right?
Yep.
Now, the other sort of surprise series here, and one that I don't think any of us predicted, is that not only are the Pens losing their series against the Islanders, they're going to face an elimination game in their next game. They are down 3-0 after this morning's beating by New York, the Islanders, which featured one of the most amazing shots by a guy named Eberle I've ever seen, which was what put them up 2-1 for them to later, you know, score even more. And I'm not weeping at all about any of this because,
Fuck the Pens.
Goodbye. Good riddance. Yeah. See you, sayonara. See you later, Pens.
Some people might be sharpening their revenge knife of saying, oh, it'd be so sweet to beat the Pens in the cup. I don't care. I don't care who we face to win a cup. I just want a cup. We could face a group of like toddlers and I'd still consider that cup a good win. Like I do not care.
Nobody cares. If you win the cup, it doesn't really matter who you beat. You're just happy you have the cup. It would be nice to see a playoff second round that doesn't contain, you know, Sidney Crosby or Malkin or Murray or any of those guys. They've had their time in the sun. And again, this speaks to, interestingly, first of all, you know, what a hot goalie can do for you. And the Islanders absolutely have had tremendous goalie play by Robin Lehner. And second, what you can achieve if you actually have a good coach.
Yep. And honestly, Lehner has been one of those goalies who has been getting bounced around, and the storyline is constantly like, is he going to live up to his potential? And maybe the magic coach is the thing that's sort of been harming this guy, because like he's been all over the league, and so maybe this is it for him. And
he's had some personal challenges too. I think he's diagnosed bipolar, I think, right? And has fought through that. I know he's diagnosed with a mental illness, and that's been a part of the narrative for him this year. Unless I'm thinking about somebody else, but I thought that was Lehner. Well, and that's tremendous to put it together for a year like this, right? That's also a great narrative. And so is the narrative of this team that people basically took as a team that was dead meat once they lost Tavares, and dead meat once they signed a bunch of guys that didn't look like they were really on the sort of career upswing anymore. But again, what can be done when a coach, you know, sort of takes the players he's given and puts a system that maximizes their abilities and gets hot goalie play and has a couple of really young, great players like Matthew Barzal and Jordan Eberle, among others. And it just comes together, right? Sometimes it's a Cinderella story and stuff just works, and we should just sit back and enjoy it, because if the Islanders beat the Pens, great. If they match up against Washington in round two, it's not like they have no chance here. You know, that's the one seed and the second seed in that division facing each other, right?
Yep.
The Islanders got there through hard work, quality of play, etc.
Yeah, and I just got to say, Dave's called out how it's fun to watch a former Oiler winger go crazy, a.k.a. Eberle and Hall. I really love watching former Oiler hopefuls go somewhere else and do well. It makes me happy.
Yeah, and not to say that those guys weren't fantastic when they played for the Oilers either, right? That the whole point of that, the hilarity of that narrative is the trade was one for one.
Yep.
or what have you. Or the fact that, you know, not only is it Eberle, but they could have had Barzal. That was their pick
that
the Islanders used, right? So this Oilers team could be as stacked as any team in the league, but they're not. And they're never going to be good again. So let's, I don't think there's much to say about the other series yet, because they're about where we expected them to be, at least in the Eastern Conference. So let's just briefly...
I want to touch on Toronto and Boston, because I like this matchup. I've always liked Toronto versus Boston. And Austin Matthews is maybe one of my favorite non-Shark players in the league right now. So I desperately want Toronto to upset there. I don't think they will. I think the best they can hope for is like game five, game six. But I really want to see Boston go out. Not only because I hate Boston, but just I would like to see Austin Matthews sort of get to those later stages, and I'd like to see that team sort of, you know, get a little bit more battle hardened through the playoffs.
That's fair. I mean, like I said, I picked the Bruins to come out of that series, not because Toronto's not talented, but because, you know, I think
the Bruins are damn good.
The Bruins are always seem to maximize their what they have. And mm-hmm. Toronto does not, because I think their coach has a little bit of DeBoer disease, which is that he's a little hung up on how hockey was played 10 or 15 years ago and makes inexplicable play decisions sometimes. Now, also there, you know, Toronto has gotten themselves a bit into a problem through undisciplined play as well, because Nazem Kadri is going to be, I think he was suspended for a game for that hit to the head. You know, something Kadri tends to do every 30 or 40 games, which is do something dumb and get himself suspended. Which, by the way, I would give any amount of money to have gotten a hold of Kadri years ago when Toronto was down on him. So I'm not saying that because I think he's a bad player or a bad person. Just, hey, he's a guy a little bit like Evander Kane, who occasionally makes a dumb choice on the ice, and you hope you don't die by it. And maybe Toronto does die by losing the center. They've certainly got the talent to overcome a guy getting himself suspended.
Sure, but hey, Toronto fans, maybe take a fucking step back and let your players breathe a little bit, because the culture that you build around your team matters. And let's face it, players do not come to San Jose and say, wow, these fans suck. Wow, it sucks being here. No, like, just chill out, man. Chill out a little bit and let your players play, because... You guys have a team in Toronto right now. You're not a joke anymore. You know, nobody's wondering when Sundin is going to come back and save your ass.
Yeah, no, this is the best team they've had in at least a decade or more, right?
At least.
And that's, you know, they're a team that's going to be good, very, very good for a long time, probably, as long as they're going to have trouble managing the cap. It is what it is.
Yeah.
I think they underachieved this year in the regular season. Mm-hmm. It was a little bit injuries, and also again a little bit. I think that their Babcock is an overrated coach who does not make the best choices in terms of play decisions. I feel comfortable saying that, and you may disagree, but that's okay.
I think Babcock should have retired rather than move teams.
I'm not surprised that he didn't. Right? He wanted to prove that he could do it outside of the Red Wings system, and that's fine.
But sure, I just think you're right. He was a great coach for the early era of his career, and the league moved on and he didn't, which is a shame, because damn, that team is like, oh, there's some real great players on that team. And I got to say, Marleau has fit in really nicely there.
Yeah, Marleau is definitely on the downswing of his productivity, though, and you can see that a lot this year, and even so far in the. I don't want to get, you know, we can come back and talk about Marleau at the end. We need to move forward since we're a Shark podcast here. So Western Conference, I don't think anything really surprises us in any of the matchups so far.
Well,
Nashville and Dallas are tied, and I don't think that's a surprise. No. I called the Blues coming out of the Jets series, and they're up 2-0. That doesn't surprise me at all.
I mean, but why? Like, you got to explain this one to me, because as we pointed out in a previous podcast, I've been sleeping on the Blues.
Mm-hmm.
Like, is it just the Jets aren't, like, they just haven't shown up this season? Because, like, they were my pick, but I really haven't been watching them. So
They definitely didn't show up as much this season as they did last year, nor did Nashville, right? That division was at the top, you know, not as good as the Pacific was at the top. And I, as I said last week, I think the Blues are a team that are built more for the playoffs than the Jets are. In that sense that they've got a better goalie, who's having a better year, and they play a more physical game. All that really means here in this matchup is that when luck matters more than it does across 82 games, I felt it was more likely they would come out of that series than the Jets would. And that doesn't mean the Jets aren't good, or maybe on paper just as good as them talent wise, but the better goalie matters.
Yeah. Oh, right? Yeah.
And we're, you know, we've that's the thing we basically just said when we talked about Islanders Pens, right? Leonard has been a better goalie this year than Murray, and it's proven true.
Here's a tip to listeners. The better goalie discussion is going to be coming back real soon when we get to our series.
Right. Yeah. Foreshadowing.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Calgary and Colorado are tied. And, you know, again, those series that are tied, we can't really say for sure what's going to happen there, nor can we really say for sure what's going to happen with, you know, a series where one team is up 2-0.
Yep.
But it doesn't surprise me that, you know, Colorado can take a game from Calgary at home. And it doesn't surprise me that Dallas took a game from Nashville at home. Maybe it surprised me a little bit more that Dallas did, but, you know, that's again, any given game, right? Yeah. Luck can pile up on one side or the other and a team goes back home, with a tie.
Yeah. And I mean, back in the 90s and back in early 2000s, the Flames and the Avalanche, teams I hate. I mean, I haven't really cared about them, you know, because they became mostly irrelevant, but
yeah,
it's kind of nice to potentially have one of those two bastards on the horizon. But I would choose the Avalanche if I had to choose.
Yeah, me too. Me too. I'm a little torn on that, and I'll talk about that a little bit. I mean, here's the thing, right? In that series, Calgary just dominated the game they won.
Yep.
Right? The opening game. And then, you know, I didn't get a chance to really check in on the game Colorado won. So I don't know what really led that. So I can't speak to it. The thing that Calgary that I'm torn on with Calgary is Mike Smith, if he has a good game, can really turn a game because how much he plays the puck and how good he is at handling the puck. Mm-hmm. But he's also not been great this year. My main issue with Calgary and why I think Calgary beats the Sharks is because Calgary has just offensively dominated the Sharks in the games that they've played recently. And the Sharks defense, I just don't think can hang with that.
Well, sure. I would say the type of shooters that Calgary has are exactly the poison that our goalies can't handle. Like, as much as I freaking hate Johnny Hockey, the guy can shoot. Like, the guy is unbelievably accurate. And he's got one of those lethal snapshots. I was saying in our chat during the week that LeBanc has this, like, Bruce Lee 3-inch shot where he just gets really hard, like, high velocity shots off with no space at all. And Gaudreau is even worse. Like, Gaudreau can shoot from between his skates and have accuracy and power, and it's nuts.
Yep.
And well, our goalies are not reacting well to that sort of thing these days.
Or really any shots, good or bad. So let's go ahead and transition to the series of Sharks versus Vegas. And just as a reminder, I think the Sharks can win this series, and I think they'll win it in 6 or 7 games for various reasons. Colin, I don't remember what you predicted
the outcome would be here. I was kind of a Debbie Downer here. Like, I wanted us to win, but I didn't think we could. I've changed opinions. I honestly think, well, okay. When we get to the horse shit that was game two, you know, we can dig in deep. But I think we should be up 2 games in the series. Like, I think the only thing that's been stopping us from being 2 games up, and there are more points of failure than what I'm going to list right now.
Right.
But it's officiating and Flurry.
Okay. Like, I have a slightly different perspective on both of those things, so we'll come back to that.
Yeah, I mean, there's more. Like, we've shat our own bed a couple of times, but like, if Fleury just sort of, you know, catches the sniffles or something, I think, you know, 3 more games and we're done. And I honestly think game 2 we should have taken, but, you know, the ref stabbed us in the back and.
We'll come back. Let's save that for when we get to game two. Okay. Because, you know, I know you and Alex were really worked up about the refereeing, and the refereeing in the playoffs is always bad. But I think that, I have feelings on that. So we'll come back to it. So game one was Wednesday night Wednesday night, right? Yeah, so Thursday night was the Flames game. That's where I was at the bar. So Wednesday night was the Sharks game. This was probably the game everyone hoped we'd see the Sharks play. In the sense that we got everything we kind of wanted out of this game, two or fewer, which is, you know, has been a key to the Sharks actually winning games this year. Martin Jones looked pretty good. He was beaten twice by Mark Stone, but lots of guys get beaten by Mark Stone. And I don't think on either of those goals he gave up in game one, he was particularly bad on. I just thought they were good shots.
And I mean, I think it was the second goal where that was the weak side pass to Mark.
Yeah, I think that's right. Yes.
Like, that was defensive fuck up to me. Like, you need to keep the passing lanes blocked there.
Yeah.
Like, Jones has to be playing the angle where the play is. Defense has to be blocking the passing lane and keeping that pass from happening. So I won't lay that one at Jones's door.
Yeah. And you know, why, what is there to lay at his door? Again, at the end of the day, the Sharks win 5-2. They're up 4-1 when Stone scores his second goal. The Sharks, I felt, dominated this game at every level.
Yep.
From goalie play to defense to sort of swarming offense, you know, and just, they also, I'm going to say, got the bounces, because there were certainly pucks that could have bounced into our net that did not.
They ran the post three times in the game.
And I'm not just talking about posts. Like, you know, there's scrambles all over the place in front of the net, particularly in the third period, that could have ended up being a third or even a fourth Vegas goal. I'm not saying that to say the Sharks played a bad game. The Sharks in Vegas are relatively well matched in terms of talent. Though you might argue that the Sharks offense is better top to bottom, and we'll come back to that. But you know, the bounces didn't, I would say the bounces tilted slightly in the Sharks' favor in this game, and hence the Sharks win 5-2.
Well, the other thing, and I mean, Alex and I were all over this for game one. We were collapsing to the net so well in game one. I mean, we were being so responsible clearing out pucks, and we were being calm in front of our net. We were controlling space. We were blocking passing lanes. I mean, it was great.
Like,
that first game, if you just showed me that first game and said, "Hey, Colin, how did game two turn out?" I'd say, we won it. We had to have won it. It was great. Like,
The Sharks were up 3-0. Right. I mean, like, Pavelski gets his goal on a power play off of his chin. And that was brutal, and could have been a lot worse for the Sharks.
Best captain in the league.
And and came back with the mask and just, you know, play. I think, you know, despite having taken that goal off the face, you know, provided everything you hope a guy would.
Wait, I need to segue on Pavelski for a moment. How many bullshit penalties can Pavelski be victimized by in this series? Like, he gets tripped and they call tripping on him. Like,
well, he's made a career out of getting cross-checked and nobody ever calling it. So I can't get worked up about stuff that the refs just don't call.
I mean, I'm not so much worked up about it. It's like seeing Pavelski get worked up. That's the amazing thing to me.
Like, well, hopefully that has an impact, right? That's the point of the captain getting worked up there, is that, like we saw last year in the Vegas series, where around the middle of the series, Vegas started to make noises about how the Sharks run pick plays. And all of a sudden, the refs started calling those pick plays, right?
Yeah.
There's a line that your captain and your coach have to toe in terms of influencing the refs. And you can't go past it, or the refs just go, "Oh, really? Oh, really? That's what you want to call? All right. Well, now we're really going to super ignore it, right?"
Yeah, so, I'm sorry. Like, we've been bitching about the officiating all season because it's been especially atrocious. And
I don't agree. It's as bad as ever. It is what it is.
I think it's been especially bad. Like, it has been especially bad, especially since, like, the whole narrative the league was trying to push this season was they wanted to really sort of crack down, well, on head hits, which, bullshit, they haven't done that. And they also wanted to crack down on penalties that slow the game down, like hooking and stick penalties, basically.
I think they walked that back a long time ago.
In effect, yes. So I just, it has been so shitty, and it's been so, like, they're not pocketing the whistles, and they're not even calling anything consistently. So like on the
so it's NHL reffing is what you're saying.
Well, I feel over the lifetime of the league, it's been a steady decline. Yeah. And yeah, see, Dave agrees with me.
I don't. They're bad, and they've always been bad. And you know, whether they are particularly bad in a given game or even over a year is just, again, a lot like hockey in general. I think it's just a little bit of luck of the draw. Yeah,
sure. I've actually been trying to pay attention to this site that tracks ref stats. I'm sorry, site owner, I don't remember what your site's called. But it's kind of telling.
Well, and this isn't really relevant to game 2-1 much as it is game 2. So circle back to it.
I wanted to get to the pick plays, which is such a hard thing to call because you own the ice that you're skating down. As long as you don't change direction to interfere with somebody, you own that lane.
Right.
So I think running a pick, I don't like it in hockey. I think it's kind of dirty, but it's where the league's going. You have to start thinking this way. So, you know, it is what it is. I like that we're doing it. But yeah, it's such a shady thing for a ref to focus on. So I don't know.
I was talking about last year's series, by the way, on the pick play stuff. So I'm not sure we've seen any evidence here in this series yet that picks not being called or what have you has had any impact, you know, but it is relevant to the discussion, which we will absolutely get to about game 2 as to the quality of reffing. So I just want to finish up game 1 because I don't think there's too much. There's a couple of takeaways I want to hit about game 1. You know, one thing I do want to note is Mark Edward Vlasic did a thing that he doesn't do very well, which is he did hit the net with a shot in game 1 and actually scored a goal, which was awesome. That was an important goal that put the Sharks up to 3-0 and a very nice shot over Fleury's shoulder. Yep. Stone then got his first goal. And, you know, the thing that was a positive here is that the Sharks fought back and put a fourth goal on the board via Evander Kane on a very nice play with a great pass from Carlson.
Yep.
Then Stone got the second goal on their power play, which was just a reminder, Sharks, that you can't be taking penalties against this team because our PK is and has been questionable most of the year. You know, and then of course, probably my favorite, goal of the game was actually Hurdle's goal to close things out.
What, the empty net?
Yes, with a beautiful pass from Couture.
Okay. Yeah, right. Sure.
You know, Couture collects that puck. Hurdle immediately gets on his horse, right? And Couture just kind of banks it off the boards to him. And you see two Golden Knights Superman dive to try to block Hurdle, and all they really accomplish is to trip Hurdle after the play, and I immediately was like, oh no. His knee, but he was fine. So
Hurdle is a beast. Yeah. I just absolutely love watching opposing players skate face first into his elbow. Like, that is my new favorite thing, because it's happening a lot now where he just sticks his butt out while protecting the play.
Right.
And a player just goes face first right into his elbow and hits the ice, and then he just turns and drives the net. It's great.
Yeah, and you know, just to close out game 1, you know, it was a very physical game on both sides. There were some big hits on both sides. There were some disagreements on both sides. Kane made some reference to Reeves being a bad babysitter or something, and Reeves had the most pathetic comeback to that ever, something to the tune of, well, I must be the best paid babysitter ever, to which I say, really? A day later, that's the best you can do, Reeves? Really?
Yeah, I mean, let's face
it. Oh, sorry. One last thing. Michael Haley played pretty well.
He played extremely well. I was going to say it was the most responsible game I've ever seen him play.
Yes.
Like, Haley, every single time, and I am looking for his number every time. And every time I find him on the ice, I'm like, okay, he's supposed to be here right now. And there he was. He was positionally, like, I don't want to say perfect, because I can't take that to court, but he was everywhere I expected him to be. He wasn't doing amazing things while being there. But a lot of time in hockey, all you need to do is take up space on the ice to deter the other team from trying to move there. And he did that. Like, he didn't do anything that stood out as a fuck up. That's the thing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, so, does this mean I want him skated over other players? No.
No.
But I have to back off a little bit on the criticism.
Well, I'm grading on a curve when I say that Michael Haley had a good game, because there's only two things that he's going to provide to you, because he's not good at hockey. So he can't take a penalty and put the Sharks in a bad position. And he didn't. That's one of the most important things. The second is, if he's going to be on the ice, then he has to draw penalties.
Yep.
And he did. Yep. Now, there are some folks in our community who think that it's somehow like the most amazing thing in the world that he traded a penalty for himself with Paul Stastny, of all people, as if he's taking, like, I don't know, Alexander Ovechkin off the ice in that trade. He's not. He's taking Jonas Donskoy off the ice in that trade, to which I kind of just shrug, right, to give it as a comparison. And, he did literally take Donskoy off the ice because DeBoer's an idiot. But again, under those limited grading on a curve options, he did what the best we could hope for.
Yeah, he towed the line. And the people who are trying to say, oh, he brings gritensity, I love that you coined that term. It's so perfect.
I think I stole it from someone. I'll be perfectly
honest. All right, well,
figure out the last time he was with us.
Okay. And so let's not forget, Donskoy throws the body. Like, he looks like a scrawny guy, but he's strong. Yeah. He's a strong skater. He's one of those players that plays with a slightly too long stick.
Yeah.
But he handles it, and he is almost Couture-like with how he uses his stick to break up passing plays.
Yeah.
So there's nothing, you do not lose anything except for maybe a guy who'll get into a fist fight by trading out Donskoy for Haley.
Yeah. I totally agree. I mean, you would gain defensively, you would gain offensively. And in this league, you do want your fourth line to be capable of scoring goals. And with Michael Haley on the ice, it's not.
No.
The thing you lose is this mythological idea that a team won't take a run at your players when you have a guy like Haley on the bench. We've seen ever since he came back that teams have no problem taking runs at our players with Haley on the bench or even on the ice. And second, the idea that if they do that, Haley will make somebody pay for it. And we haven't even seen that. Right.
And
so what Haley has to do is use the only tools he has available to him to draw penalties. And that is to, if he can, get possession of the puck and keep possession of the puck, which he's not particularly good at. But if he does and uses what little speed he has, he can draw penalties. Right. He can induce a hook or what have you. And if he can get into somebody's head, and I've seen no evidence that Haley is better than most, you know, guys at getting into anybody's head. Not like Reeves can get into guys' heads.
Reeves is great at this.
Right? Because here's the thing. In the modern NHL, you have to be both kind of good at hockey and have that mindset to actually get into guys' heads. Because nobody gets into your head if you can just skate around them, strip the puck from them, and move on with your life, right? Yeah. Anyway, we've talked about this all year.
But look at how Reeves gets into our head. Like, yeah, he plays hard and he sort of steps off the play to land a hit during his shift, but he fucks with us on the line change. He takes that opportunity where he knows he's going to be skating across our bench, across our players, and then he messes with us. And he does it in front of our bench. He does it so that he's not just messing with one guy. He's messing with the entire team. And that, like, I hate to praise the guy, but that's really smart. And he does it in such a, you know, oh my God, I was just going to my bench. What are you doing getting in my way? Why is this stick under my arm that I'm holding? Oh my God, Sorensen, what are you doing trying to hook me? I'm just going to my bench. It's like, it's so childish and it's so petty, but it's so good. And yet Haley's just like, I don't know, kind of nice and like he'll throw a punch. I don't get it.
Yeah. I think there's also this idea that by having Haley there who could punch a guy, that means that Kane won't punch a guy. And there's no evidence that Kane is less likely to punch a guy just because Haley's there, right? In fact, quite the opposite. It feels to me like Kane has been more aggressive about his agitation since Haley came in. And I think that's because, look, how do guys actually decide how to do what they do on the ice, right? That comes down to their incentives. Mm-hmm. And everybody's incentive is to continue to get ice time and to continue to play. You have to do what DeBoer thinks makes you a good hockey player or makes people a good hockey player. And if DeBoer shows that what he wants is guys to agitate and to play physically, and we know that's true. We know that he gets a boner when guys play physically.
Yep.
Then that means that other guys are going to pick up on that, and to ensure their ice time, to ensure they're getting the praise in the locker room, blah, 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 blah. Like, we're talking about economics and incentives. They will do the same thing they see other guys asked to do. Yep. Right. We see that with when Ryan came back to play, he's played more physically. Whether that actually is good for how he plays the game or not is an open question. You know, Kane seems to have gotten more aggressive since Haley joined the team. And we could probably point to other guys too who are hitting more. Maybe even Donskoy, right? Because that guy desperately wants back on the ice. So there is no such thing as this guy will do this thing and these guys don't have to. It's just, that's just, it doesn't happen.
But period. On that point, do you know who I'm missing dearly right now? Šimek. I honestly did not expect when he first sort of joined and first started skating with us, I didn't expect to be missing him as badly in the playoffs as I am right now, because he's kind of what our bottom pairing needs on defense. We need that guy who's really positionally responsible,
right,
who knows when to step up and land the shoulder,
but also seem to like be willing to weirdly tell Burns no. Stop, stay over there, right? Because Ryan has never done that. And whoever's been paired with Burns besides that has never done that. You know, I don't disagree. I also am on record as saying I don't think Šimek's loss was that big a deal overall relative to the talent of this team.
I kind of think it is now.
I still don't think so.
All right.
I just don't. He's a good player, but the Sharks have plenty of good defensemen.
I think he would be more impactful in a playoffs. And I mean, he's not coming back.
I think I could agree with you there that he's more impactful in a playoff series with his physicality than Joakim Ryan is. But then you just adjust how you play and play to Ryan's strengths if you're a good coach.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Do we have a good coach, Colin?
No, we don't. We have a coach who is taking technically our three-star defenders, but really it's just Burns and Carlson, and just cycling every other defender next to them.
Yeah.
Like, I stopped trying to track defensive pairings halfway through the first game because it's like, oh.
And you know why, right? Because Joakim Ryan played 3 minutes.
Oh.
Ish.
I did not know that, actually. God damn.
Let me verify what that number ended up being, but he had only had like 3 minutes through the first.
I'm checking.
Couple periods and let's see, all strengths. Yeah, 3 minutes and 18 seconds, all strengths.
Oh God.
Yeah, you know, DeBoer he does that thing, and Alex wanted us to make sure we talk about this. DeBoer does that thing where he leans super heavily on the guys he thinks are his best players, and he did that more or less out the gate.
Well, let's run down the numbers here, because we have Carlson at 26 minutes, which, let's face it, that's not the most insane we've seen. Like, it was Burns last season at 30, right?
Well, hold on. I mean, Carlson played 29 minutes-ish his first game back from the groin injury this time, right? Yeah. So, yeah, go on.
So we got, Carlson, or am I looking at the wrong game?
Well, no. So Ryan played three minutes. Haley played 8, which is above average for him. Yeah. Goodrow played 10. LeBanc only played 10. We get up into more normal numbers. Burns played 28. Carlson played 26. Then you get down to Vlasic at 23.
Let's remember, this is the coach where his first season with us was screaming about maintaining player energy, player health by managing time.
It was all bullshit.
Well, it is now.
No, I mean, anyway. So no, let's...
He walked the walk a little bit in that first season. Like, he did a good
until the playoffs, and then he leaned into guys heavily, in the playoffs. Not so much on the defensive side, but more on the forward side. That's fine. Let's jump into game two. So I think, or actually, let's talk about one of the responses I think I saw in the community to game one, which was, the Sharks they got the bounces, but they played very well. They played very structured. They collapsed on defense. Jones looked pretty good. That game could have looked worse if a couple of those bounces went either way, but that's hockey, so fine.
Yeah.
But I do think that there was this sort of sigh of relief from the community after game one that, oh, okay, so the Sharks can and will play their best hockey now. They've been just kind of coasting, settling, not really focused, etc. And this is what a focused team will look like throughout the playoffs.
So these were the people who in January were like, oh, Stanley Cup is ours. Because, you know, that's when we were playing well. And then we fell off a fucking cliff again. Like, people, you've had 82 games to see what this team can do.
Yes.
We are one of the scariest, scariest teams offensively. We are terrifying offensively. But we have not been able to find our own asshole with a map and a flashlight defensively. So let's just understand where we are.
Though in this game, again, the Sharks played, you know, a game that looked a lot like a game the Sharks would have played during their actual Stanley Cup final run in, what was that, 15-16, right? Yeah. It looked like the team, you know, structurally, defensively, and via the forwards, you know, defending in depth, a lot like that. And, you know, if maybe we had seen game two look a lot like this, I might have been like, okay, well, maybe they have just been, you know, waiting a little bit or playing, you know, conserving energy or what have you. But unfortunately, game two looked a lot more like about half the games the Sharks played this season, particularly in the first 8 minutes.
Well,
when the Sharks gave up three not great goals and pulled Martin Jones.
So very often the subject will come up where we mention how a single player cannot win a hockey game or a series. Like you can't, even Gretzky had to come off the ice every once in a while. But a single player can absolutely scuttle your game. And Erik Karlsson absolutely sold us out for two goals. So, I mean, he is magical with the puck, except when he forgets what the fuck is going on in the game and makes a stupid pass during a penalty kill directly to the guy getting out of the box. I mean, like, yeah, Karlsson sold us out for two goals. And, I mean, we talked about this before we started recording tonight. This is the Burns effect. You know, this is Burns from last season, the season before, where it's like, okay, yeah, he's going to score a couple points, but how many is he going to give up?
Right.
And, so cool.
So I agree. You know, those three goals had each of them some amount of contribution by the defense being out of position or making a bad pass or what have you, which is the risk you always take with teams that have players who are offensively focused. And certainly it's something we've seen a lot this year. But I do want to bring some attention to the fact that Martin Jones played probably all three of those pucks as badly as you could in the situation he was put in.
Yeah, goal and number three, that was Jones. That
goal one and two, you would like Jones to stop one of those.
Yes, you would like him to, but those shots shouldn't happen.
Those shots should not have happened. But he also, you know, again, so if you're interested in this, Martin Baron, an ex-NHL goalie, actually tweeted, and I've retweeted it, so you can find it in our feed if you want to take a look at it. Sort of diagrammed Jones' positioning on both the first two goals, showed the ways in which Jones was not well positioned to play the one on one. Essentially, in each case. And that is not to say that even a well-positioned goalie is guaranteed to stop both those pucks, either of those pucks, what have you. But Jones is out of position.
Yep.
Period. And this goes back to that conversation we've been having all year long, which is the chicken and the egg question. Is Jones bad because the defense is bad? Or is the defense bad because Jones is weak and they're trying to be supermen all the time? Or maybe not even that, is, you know, Jones being hung out to dry because the defensemen are being poorly coached and overemphasizing offense and blah, 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 right? It's the same crap.
Yeah. And I think it's both. Like, I think it's a staring contest between Jones and the defense on who's going to fuck up first. And then when one side fucks up, the other side just dives in after them.
Yeah.
And in this case, yeah. First two goals, situations that shouldn't have happened. The goalie shouldn't have to deal with that. But let's face it, this is the time when a goalie has to stand on their head. And then the third goal is just, hey, Jones, what are we paying that, you know, what, $5-6 million for?
Right. Like,
seriously, dude.
But the thing is that you have half the community, half of the Sharks community that is like, Jones is bad. And you've got the other half of the community saying, no, he's not. And I don't think you can say he's not bad. You can't, you know, and again, I present as evidence the fact that on those two one-on-ones, he's out of position. He's not where he should be. He is not playing those well. And that's not to say that the defense is blameless. I'm not saying that. That's not to say that the defense isn't playing two-on-ones poorly, which is something Alex would bring up here, because they do play two-on-ones poorly for whatever reason. And again, all of this does roll up to the actual problem here is the coach who has had no answers all year.
Sure.
But here's the thing, right? Sharks are down 3-0. 8 minutes in, and that's inexcusable, and it goes to the whole thing. It's inexcusable for Jones, and he got pulled. It's inexcusable for the defense, and you know, if Carlson hadn't helped get back some points later in the game, then you know we'd really be side eyeing him Fry style, I think, right now. But I think you have to live with Burns and Carlson screwing up occasionally to get what we get out of them.
Yep.
You can't accept the way Jones is playing.
No.
And I don't understand how it hasn't been addressed. His positional issues haven't been addressed. Now, that's not to say that there's any solution in the Sharks system, because Dell is bad too, though he then came in and I can't argue about how he played. The Sharks actually managed to fight back and make it a tie game at the end of the first, right? And as you said this earlier in our podcast, the Sharks could have and maybe even should have won this game.
So, well, it should have at least been tied through the second. I mean, Alex, if he was here, he'd be spewing fire from every facial orifice he has over this, because he's called out to us, and I think he's absolutely right. The refs absolutely flipped the momentum of the game with a blown call. Before we dig into that particular can of worms, I'm just going to say, anybody who wants to say that, you can't really blame the goaltending, you know, those situations will happen. You're going to have to face some hard shots. You're not going to stop all of them.
Right.
Take a look at Fleury. Take a look at the places we're shooting on him from. Take a look at how much we're opening up the Vegas defense, and explain to me why one side is, you know, sort of just tearing open the goalies with every shot, and our side is not, because Fleury is absolutely crushing us, and he is doing his job, and he's doing a damn fine job of it.
Well, I'm not as ready to wrap Fleury in another Stanley Cup or bronze him and elevate him above the Sharks goalies, because again, the Sharks do come back and tie this game. I didn't think Fleury was very good in game one, and I'm not ready to say he was great in game two. He certainly was amazing last year. If we're talking about last year's playoffs, I am absolutely with you that Fleury was better than the Sharks goalies are this year.
Are you saying Fleury has not played better than our goalies in these two games?
Well, I mean, Jones was very good in game one. So I've certainly in game one, I think Jones was the better goalie, because the Sharks scored five. Well, four on him and one on an empty net, which is like having Jones in goal.
Compare the shots that Fleury faced versus the shots that Jones faced. Like, I think Fleury had, I mean, first off, just how are you going to block a tip off the face? I mean, if you watch Fleury on that,
well, that's goal, a set play, Colin. I mean, you just have to be ready for it.
Well, I don't know. Like, it's one of the few times that you'll see a goalie get scored on and his eyes never follow the puck. He's just looking at the dude who's bleeding from the face going, damn.
Yeah. I'm just saying, I'm not ready to say that Fleury has been the better goalie in this series. Let's see what happens in game three, because Fleury hasn't been good this year. And he's been hurt a little bit, etc.
I think my point is, I think Fleury has been the best player on Vegas. Like, I think he is the thing that's holding that team in the series.
Hmm. Well, I see, my perspective is on that, and this came down to sort of how I evaluated the Sharks versus Vegas, is that I think the Sharks are top to bottom more talented than Vegas.
Yes, I agree.
And that there is a great disparity in coaching. Gallant is a far better coach with a far better system, and that you know, that has kept Vegas pretty good in a year where their goalies have not been good and have been hurt. Right. Yeah. And that they haven't, you know, whatever magic they had last year. And, you know, Alex mentioned part of it is, I think, a systemic change that they aren't playing the same sort of swarm style they did last year, maybe because they don't have all of the same pieces to do that. And they've had injuries on the defensive side, et cetera, too. Right. So to me, this series comes down to the bounces and the coaching. And again, the Sharks are already at a disadvantage there. And it's the talent that is going to take advantage of the bounces, right? Yep. And that comes down to Pavelski taking one off the teeth and into the goal. And that comes down to, you know, Vlasic actually making a great shot over Fleury's shoulder. Because, you know, the thing we have seen, and this is something I want to talk about in terms of Fleury, is that the Sharks seem to be going for two types of shots. One is glove side shoulder. Yep. And Fleury has not been good on those shots.
Nope.
And the second is five hole. They went a lot more at the five hole in game two.
Yep.
And that paid off a bit, but Fleury had good defensive structure in front of him and also had the refs on his side. So let's go ahead and talk about that.
Oh, man. Okay. So first off, for those people who are new to hockey, when a goalie steps out of the blue paint, he is fair fucking game. You can take a run at him if you want. You're going to have, you know, what, 16 other guys coming at you if you do. But, I mean, throw an elbow, throw a stick, you know, fucking corkscrew the guy. Do what you want because he is outside of the safe zone. You can absolutely not interfere with a goalie when his skates are outside of the blue paint. Watch the replay. His left foot goes back into the blue paint after he gets shoved. It is so classically not goaltender interference that, like, I kind of threw up in my mouth a little bit when that call was made. It was so completely wrong. I almost wanted to get what was that complete jackass who used to play on Dallas and then on the Rangers? Avery.
Right.
Like, I almost want to bring Avery back from whatever gutter he's in, hopefully. And just put him on the Sharks team just so he can just skate by Fleury and tap him in the head with his stick. Because, like, you have no privilege when you're outside of your paint. And to treat it any other way is stupid and it's wrong. And to then give the other team a power play to deny a goal, give a power play
that on which they scored.
And, you know, a power play goal is a power play goal.
It's a two goal swing.
Yeah,
because the Sharks are up 4-3 before the refs make that bad call.
Yep.
And then they're down 4-3 after the refs make that bad call. But here's what I kind of want to say about this, which is, you know, the fan base went absolutely apeshit after that sequence, and rightfully so. I mean, it's a bad call and it jobbed the Sharks, and the Sharks, you know, gave up the goal on the power play and then ultimately lose 5-3. But that's not nowhere near the end of the game. And the only thing you can do in a position like that is you have to buckle down and fight back because it's reality. And again, this goes back to our discussion about the refs in general, which is, you know, everybody seems to be just horrified and shocked when the refs, you know, totally leave a steaming turd on the ice. And to me, I'm like, but it is this way every year. The Sharks get jobbed on a call in the playoffs every year, at least once. And sometimes it costs them a game and sometimes it doesn't. And if you look around the league, this is happening to everybody all the time. It's an epidemic. So there's nothing to be done here except to see how the Sharks respond to it in the long run. They failed the response in the short run because they gave up the goal and lost the game.
Yep.
And the only thing we can do now is see that can they fight back from this, the adversity. And you know, you're going to face adversity in the playoffs. And if you can't fight back from adversity, you don't deserve to move on.
Agreed. But we come back to coaching because to me, a team bouncing back, a team adapting to a situation, that's the coach's job. The coach's job is to say exactly what you just said, to say, hey, suck it up. It's happened. Now you have to deal with it. And we're going to deal with it by doing this. And I mean, our special teams have been terrible. Like there is no reason a team with the players that we have should not be in the top three for special teams on both sides.
And the power play was not good in game two.
No.
Either. In fact, you could even call it sort of incompetent, because the thing is that, you know, Vegas took a ton of penalties.
Yep.
You know, we can complain about the job that was done in terms of taking a goal off the board for the Sharks and ultimately the Sharks giving up the winning goal off of that. But the Sharks were given ample opportunities.
1 for 8.
Ample opportunities to force, to make Vegas pay for their mistakes. And in that sense, like, you know, I don't think yes, the refs made a grievous error on that call they made with Couture. But otherwise, they kept Vegas accountable for their mistakes. And the Sharks failed to do anything about that. And what's bad about that is if the Sharks can't make Vegas pay for their mistakes, then the Vegas is incentivized to continue to just hack, slash, you know, and agitate. And that's where the Sharks will lose this series, is if they let it get to that.
Well, yeah. I mean, especially if you have a team taking a penalty, killing the penalty, and scoring as the guy gets out of the box. I mean,
true as well. Yeah, but they gave up. Didn't they give up 2 shorthanded goals?
I think you're right.
I'm just double checking, but I was so angry about things. I had a memory of that. No, yes, the final goal, the 5-3 goal, was shorthanded in the third.
And there you go. Like, it's classic hockey wisdom. I don't know how valid it is anymore in this new league, but the classic wisdom is power play and penalty kill is what gets you to the cup. Because if you need to be lethal on the power play, it needs to be so dangerous for a team to take a penalty against you that they do everything they can to avoid that. Which,
granted that in the playoffs, traditionally, you don't get a lot of opportunities. They don't call as many penalties, too.
Sure, exactly. And so when you do not have that threat, then, yeah, hey, Reeves, go take a run. Do what you want. Who cares? And it only gets worse. Like, the less effective you are on the power play, the more liberties teams are going to take as the playoffs go, because the refs, that pocket with the whistle gets deeper as the playoffs go on.
That's true. And as the game goes on, because the refs are desperately afraid of being the ones that tilt a match until they do.
Yeah.
Right. Like, they don't, the reason they swallow their whistles as the game approaches the 60th minute is because they don't want to be seen as the ones that led to the tying or winning goal.
Yep.
Right. Which is, again, we've talked about over and over again, how that's the dumbest thing in the world. And that they actually do tilt the match by not calling penalties because they incentivize teams that would otherwise maybe not have the talent to win the game to just throw their guys, you know, into the grinder. Right.
Yep. So exactly.
Anyway, I think the bigger thing here now, unless you have more you want to talk about with this game.
I mean, not really. I'm more to the broader level. Like, game 3 is going to be intriguing.
Yeah, it's obviously game 3 is key in a lot of ways. And it's not like if the Sharks lose this game, the series is over. It's not. But as a Sharks fan, what do we want to see out of game 3 is the real question, right? Having left game 2, it looks like we have questions, as we have all year, about Martin Jones and his ability to play goalie. Mark-Edward Vlasic will not play tonight because he took a puck to the head and apparently has a concussion. Oh. Now, if you're me and a bit of a troll, you whisper quietly, that's not a huge deal because he's not as good as people think he is anymore. and also, it brings Tim Heat into the game, and Tim Heat is fine. Mm-hmm. Though it has been pointed out to me, and I will note, that Tim Heat will be playing on his offside, and folks feel he is not very good on his offside playing opposite Justin Braun. I can't say with any confidence whether that is true or not, because I haven't evaluated it.
Well,
go ahead.
To me, the scary thing is you're going to have Carlson and Burns both playing above 30 minutes. Seriously.
Yeah. No, well, it's that or Justin Braun plays 28 minutes.
Well,
that should be a sentence that strikes fear
into
every Sharks fan's heart.
Because you look at the time on ice, and Braun is up there. Like, when the going gets tough, for some reason Braun gets stuck in there, and he fades. Like, it's hard to keep an eye on him when the play gets intense, because he fades out of the play, And I hate to tell you, the reason you're not seeing him is because he's out of position.
Yeah, the loss of his foot speed.
Yeah.
Has affected him
badly.
Pretty greatly.
So we're going to see Carlson and Burns pushing like 33 minutes in this game, and they are going to be paired with every single other defender on the team. And there's going to be, you know, they're basically going to be lone gunmen out there. And then they're going to get paired together at those brilliant times when DeBoer's like, hey, you know, two dedicated shooters is better than one. Hope they make the right play and don't shoot into anybody's skates. It's insanity. So, like, that kind of scares me. But what the thing I want to see most out of game three is I want to walk into the second period with a 0-0 score. I want the second period to be 0-0 because I think we've shown ourselves to be the better late minute team than Vegas. Like, yeah. I think we play better in the second period. I think we play better in the third. I think that we have more offensive gears. Like, we can step it up higher than Vegas can. So if we can just get through the first period without Vegas hitting us hard and fast, because that's what they're doing. Like, it is so plain that they're trying to come out, smash us early, and then sort of, you know, back off, you know, trying to take us like the Penguins did. And, you know, we can rally back, which shows that we're the stronger team offensively. I just get through that first period, survive the first period with 0-0 or go one goal up. That's fine too.
But just, yeah, that's the thing. I think I look at it slightly differently than you, but very similarly, which is that first of all, you got to get past 5 minutes without Jones having given up a bad goal, right? You can't play Vegas from behind, and you certainly don't want to be playing from down 3-0. Now, again, this team is good enough offensively to have fought back in that first 20 minutes to be a 3-3 and should have been up 4-3 after Kocur's goal that got waved off. Right. And that's fine, but we need to see more of team one Sharks or game one Sharks, right? A Sharks team that collapses to the net, protects Jones, doesn't give up dumb chances, particularly because the guy who's hurt, Mark Edward Vlasic, is one of the few guys on this team who is still defensively focused.
Yep.
Even on the defensive side. That's not to say that Carlson can't be great defensively. He can. Absolutely. He can be very, very good defensively because defense isn't just, you know, stopping a puck from getting in the net. It's taking the puck away from the other team and passing that puck out of the zone and maintaining possession, getting possession, maintaining possession, right? And yep. Carlson is very good at that. Brent Burns is very good at that. They just have to eliminate the mistakes. They cannot afford the vast majority of mistakes that they have tended to take this year in the games they've lost. That's it. So get into the second period with a lead, or certainly, you know, get out of the first 5 minutes without being behind, and then let's see what happens. Those are the keys to me, right? And I would like to see the Sharks also maybe spread their minutes out a bit more.
Yep.
You know, but
I would love to see Donskoy skate instead of Haley. I would love to see our fourth line take 10 minutes because, I mean, it's hard to sort of keep these guys in mind when you have our top nine forwards playing like out of their minds. Like, yep. Our top nine are doing so good.
Yep.
Let's face it, Melker, he's not slouching. Goodrow?
No.
Haley is positionally responsible, but if you put Donskoy, you put somebody who has genuine hands and genuine shooting ability, genuine playmaking ability with Goodrow and Carlson. Hey guys, do we not remember that Carlson can actually shoot sometimes?
Yeah, I've kind of two thoughts on that too. First, you know, if two guys kind of deserve a lot of credit for having improved their play across this season. And really solidifying their play defensively and offensively, though you can't see the results offensively very much because, you know, they're not talented that way. It's Goodrow and Carlson. They've done everything, you know, I think that we could ask for them to have done. And I think if you ask them privately, hey, who would you rather be playing with, Jonas Donskoy or Michael Haley? You would get honestly an answer that they'd rather be playing with Jonas Donskoy because. Yeah. That gives them an opportunity to tilt the ice that they don't have with Haley on the ice.
Yep.
And second to that is, is that, you know, that's the challenge here, right? Is that we, DeBoer has intentionally put the Sharks in a position where their fourth line can only do so much. And that's going to be problematic against playoff caliber teams.
Well, DeBoer is also putting the entire team, like, he is shifting our players to win this series. And it's he thinks, but it's like, dude, you have three more series you have to get through if you want to take a cup.
Yep.
And you've put a Pavelski who's eaten a puck on the ice for 25 minutes.
Yep.
Like, dude, are you kidding me here?
Yep.
Where you get the fourth line out there for at least like 10 to 12 minutes. That's time that you can rest. If you're a little bit smarter with how you position people just for faceoffs, like if you have a neutral zone faceoff, don't put your first line out there. That's one of the safest faceoffs you can possibly have.
Yeah, he's put again, like almost everything we see this year is seems to be an emphasis on scoring goals, not preventing them.
Yeah, right? Sure.
And that's what we're seeing there.
And like it's just, you need to roll your lines. You need to lean on your fourth. Because in the first game, he leaned on the fourth line and the fourth line stepped up. And I'm not giving Haley a gold star, but I'm saying
silver.
Yeah, you know, he's demonstrated he can skate in the league. Like,
well, he's demonstrated again that where he's truly a detriment, where he could kill this team, is if he takes a dumb penalty at the worst possible time, which we saw him do in matchups against Vegas in the regular season, right?
Well, yeah, it's Russian roulette. You only get to lose once.
Yeah. Well, four times technically, but yes, I know what you mean there. Yeah. So that's, you know, the keys there are the Sharks cannot take dumb penalties. They can't give up shorthanded goals. they can't do most of the things they did poorly in game two. And win this series.
Well, we can't give momentum up in the first five.
Like that's exactly the
absolute worst. And now if you're asking me what sort of Christmas presents in April I would want, Dylan checking Reeves into an open bench gate. Like
wow.
That is what I dearly want to see happen.
Rude, man. I don't disagree though.
Does he not deserve it?
Who's talking about deserve?
I mean, Reeves has basically made his mark as the guy who messes with teams at the bench. Check that guy into an open gate. Let him just enjoy that little piece of hockey tradition.
Yeah. So we are a little bit long right now, I think. So let's go ahead and wrap up so that people can get ready to watch the 4 o'clock game if they want to. So let's do our three stars of the week. Shall we start with Alex's?
Oh, right. I have to remember what these are.
I've got them. I'll scroll up to them. So Alex provided us his thoughts, and I hope that we've actually covered all of his thoughts on the way things have gone so far. But his three stars were, third, he's very conflicted about this, but he gives, Erik Karlsson the third star for the week because Karlsson has been a bit of both a pro and a con in the two games, but he's been so instrumental in the offensive production of the team that he thought that was worth a third star. Second, he's giving a star to Pavs, and not just because Pavs scored the first tooth goal we've ever seen out of the Sharks, but because of everything that Pavs brings to the table and is worth emphasizing here. Maybe what we didn't emphasize among what he wanted us to talk about is just how important Pavs is to this team as a leader on the ice and off of it.
Yep.
And number one, he wanted to give a star as an ultimate cop out to the entire Sharks offense. Colin, your thoughts?
Well, I'll give an honorable mention to Alex's wife and her bingo card for this series because just from the conversations we've had, you know, she's a Sharks fan, so she knows her stuff, and she's got a great bingo card, which includes.
Is this your third star? Is my question.
No. What was it? It was a disgruntled interview with Couture after the game. Oh, I love that. I hope that was her middle square on the bingo card. I just like that's got to be the gimme. My stars. Okay. My third star has got to be Burns.
Okay.
we're not screaming about Burns' defensive failures. He's had a couple just epic defensive plays. I'll cite game two where he picked the puck out of the air and smacked it back into the neutral zone to start a rush. We're screaming about Carlson making bad plays, giving up goals. So we've got another scoring defenseman who's kind of fucking up on defense, but it's not Burns. And I think Burns is really, really maturing. Like he's kind of taking over Vlasic's role and doing a better job of it.
Well, I don't know that we can ever say in the long term whether Burns has matured, but certainly any game he doesn't play terribly is a good one.
Two playoff games in a row, I'm happy.
Yeah.
My second star has got to go to Hurdle. The guy is a beast. I think it's between him and Kane on which is the hardest to play against. I think Hurdle takes it just because, like I said, people are just bouncing off of him. That guy is awesome. First star has to go to Pavelski. He is the heart of this team. He is everything. He is Captain America, best captain in the league. Please let nothing more happen to Pavelski.
Well, yeah, I totally agree with that. So my stars, I think, are number three. I give a star to Logan Couture's Nads, wherever they are now. Because he absolutely lost them to science after blocking that shot in game two. But, you know, in that sense, I also kind of want to give a star to Couture, right? Because the Sharks should have been up 4-3 in that game, largely thanks to him. Yep. And it's not his fault that the refs and, you know, as a result, a lot of fans don't really know what it, you know, interference looks like anymore. Yep. It's kind of like pass interference in football. Nobody knows what it is until the refs decide what it is. My second star is a little bit harder, but I think I'm going to mirror you more or less the rest of the way. I think Evander Kane has been great in this series and hasn't really done anything too dumb yet, which is always our fear with him and Michael Haley. And it's, you know, his goal was obviously key to make it 4-1 in game one. He's in Reeves' head. Even though I don't think his insults were particularly good against Reeves. Reeves certainly flubbed the counter to it. And my first star is 100% Joe Pavelski.
Yep.
And not just because first tooth goal in the NHL ever. He showed this when he was out with injury. He's what makes this team go in every way. And at his age, offensively, that should not be so. And so we're very, very lucky that we continue to get to enjoy him. Given where this team's salary cap structure is, I have to be a bit of a bummer. We may not, whatever happens here, may be the last of the Joe Pavelski era, which again is real sad for me because literally the only jersey I own for this team is a Joe Pavelski jersey, though I'll be buying a Timo Meier one soon enough.
It's a good jersey. And just to give another nod to Kane, Thornton's goal in game two is completely manufactured by Kane. And not only does Kane just maul the Vegas player, take the puck off the guy and drive the net, he is smart enough to look at that situation and hold the puck to dish off to create a chance. I mean, a lesser player would just mindlessly throw that puck at Fleury and, you know, maybe get a rebound, maybe get a face off, neither of which would have been useful given that there was like 20 seconds on the clock. I mean, that was such a great hockey play. It was brutal and mean to start, and it was smart and elegant to finish. Just head to toe, great play by Kane.
I agree. Yeah. We're going to call it here and let people go and give a good big old go Sharks for game five coming up tonight at 7 p.m. in Vegas. If you have enjoyed this podcast, you can find me generally speaking on Twitter at Circling the Cup. If I miss the game and Alex decides to go crazy on Facebook, you're seeing his mindless drivel instead of my mindless drivel in those cases. Maybe tonight we'll see both. So on Facebook, we are Facebook/Circling the Cup. You can find the podcast at www.circlingthecup.com, or on iTunes, or probably on Android. Again, we have no idea. Android is a black box for us, and we're just guessing. Sorry, game three tonight in Vegas. The loss guaranteed that there will be five games. Thank you for catching that, Dave. Hey, we misspeak sometimes, man. We just blathered for what, like an hour and a half? Cut us a break. So besides that, I'm going to say peace out. Colin, say peace out.
No.
I will say peace out on Colin's behalf. So we'll be back maybe Friday night. It'll depend on kind of how the games roll out from here. Actually, we probably won't do Friday night. I've got guests again this coming weekend. We'll figure it out. We'll post on Twitter. We'll post on Facebook our schedule going forward. So everybody enjoy the game tonight, and let's hope for a big Sharks win. Let's say 7 goals from the Sharks and maybe 1 from Vegas.